Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Martin Borison. This is one of those conversations I have every once in a while that feels incredibly pertinent to our times, and I think points to the deeper field we're being invited to move into as coaches. We're going to be exploring today dream work, psychedelics, and leadership in coaching. Martin is an executive coach, and he's been tapping into the potency of dreams with his clients for many years, and he's now creating trainings for coaches to do the same thing with their clients. So we'll explore today why dreams are so efficient and intelligent. In a sense, they are portals not only to our own maturing, our own unfolding and self-awareness, but actually can open us into a field of intelligence that we can then bring into our lives that brings creativity and innovation and embodiment. So we'll talk about some very different topics today. We'll talk about teleology, how dreams are, in a sense, these portals to our future unfolding. We'll talk about shadow work and dream work. We'll talk about trauma work and dreams, the relationship between dreams and psychedelic work, the hero's journey. And most importantly, we'll get right into how Martin engages in DreamWorks with his clients. What actually does he do with his clients? So a little bit more about Martin. He's a coach and an innovator and pioneer in the field of meditation and mindfulness. He distilled his diverse range of experiences and insights into a simple and new form of meditation training, one moment meditation. And this playful technique has helped over 1 million people start meditating. He trained extensively with the legendary Dr. Stanislav Grof. In the past, he worked as a psychotherapist, supporting people recover from severe trauma, facilitating retreats using breath work. In 2021, he launched the One World, One Vote campaign to encourage politicians to take bold action to avert climate catastrophe. And his book, One Moment Meditation, Stillness for People on the Go, has been published into 13 languages. As you'll hear, I'm really enthusiastic about the importance of dream work and tapping into the imaginal. I feel that this is a frontier in coaching and actually is a capacity we are being invited to open into, to perhaps reclaim, that could bring new ways of leading and collaborating and creation into this world. So let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Martin Borison. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Martin, it's a delight to be with you. And I've been particularly looking forward to this conversation after seeing what you're creating in the world. We're going to be exploring dreams and psychedelics and leadership and their connection to coaching, which is, I think, a stunning topic. So that's amazing. How are you doing today?
I'm great, and really nice to connect with you and the community that you're gathering. Feels almost primed for something bigger.
Yeah, I like that. Actually, just maybe could you say in a sentence or two just what you're up to in the world? I know you're working with clients, and could you just give us a sense of who you are in two or three sentences? I know that's a difficult order, but.
Yeah, thank you. It is difficult. My primary work at the moment is as an executive coach and consultant to leaders and top teams. So that would be the calling card. But I'm also writing and teaching around meditation and consciousness and politics. And that's the underlying activity at the moment.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting into that, to the seam that opens up as you name that.
Yeah.
I'd love to just begin then by asking you, we played around with the title Dreams, Psychedelics, and Leadership, and we're going to go into each of those in a bit more detail, but could you say why you think they are an important kind of grouping of topics? What, in a sense, why should coaches listen to this conversation?
What a great intro question, and we'll probably spend the whole interview talking about why people should listen to this conversation. And even to put dreams and psychedelics and leadership in the same title is a bit bold, I think, of us. So maybe it's to say a brief version of the answer would be what dreams and psychedelics both do is give us access to what I would call the not yet known. The not yet known. But some people call the unconscious, but I don't really like that word, although I will use it. I would just rather say the not yet known, but already existing, the markers to the future or to a future. So we're talking about access to the not yet known, and dreams and psychedelics are both ways people have found, used to get access to the not yet known. I should say not just the not yet known that seems to have meaning and value. So then that takes care of the first two terms, dreams, psychedelics. And then the question is, why leadership? Well, I've almost answered that, because one understanding of leadership is that a leader, or the leader in each of us, brings us to the not yet known, or creates the future, or moves forward. So that's, I think, the link. And what I'm and many of my colleagues would say is that the best leaders, or the leaders that we need, are the ones that are not just inventing or maximizing or optimizing the known or within the known, but they're actually getting access to the not yet known that has huge benefit for us. Just briefly
brilliant.
Give you, yeah, okay.
That's stunning, yeah. I just wanted to let that one hang a little bit, because it was a beautiful articulation.
Even the word psychedelic, a lot of people don't realize this, it actually means mind manifesting. That's exactly what the word means, mind manifesting. So we use the word psychedelic to refer to certain medicines or drugs or chemicals that help us manifest our own mind more or more quickly or more deeply. But even that has a quality of leadership in it too. It's like, what if leaders are about helping us manifest mind? So I've started to even play with the term psychedelic leadership, which is not about psychedelics necessarily in the drug sense, but it just is in the sense that a leader is here to help us manifest mind, more of the mind that we could access and build worlds from that.
So I'm now even more excited about our conversation. So I'm glad I asked you that question. Let me just check one little thing before we move into some of these juicy topics. So you said I don't like using the word unconscious. How come?
First of all, it has a slightly archaic quality. It bears a lot of baggage from maybe the early psychoanalysts that used it. And I don't think all of that is up to date or accurate. But the key problem, I think, when people hear unconscious is that they think the unconscious is like the basement within their own body, that it kind of lives in our basement somewhere. So we have the idea from Freud that the unconscious is primarily made up of stuff that we've forgotten or repressed. So it has a very personal quality of like the basement with all the stuff in it that you forgot to clear out. So there's a couple problems with that. This is all metaphor, right, Joel? Like, we don't really know where the unconscious is, but so we're just saying which metaphor is the most useful for us. So Jung advanced that idea by saying there's the personal unconscious, and then there's this strange thing called the collective unconscious, because he started seeing in patients' dreams indications of knowledge or wisdom or even images that were beyond their ability to have known them. So clearly weren't personally forgotten, but seemed to be pre-existing, or somehow they were getting access to it. But that's remained very controversial, but he also didn't really know where that was. And I think my impression is that his model was still using the basement metaphor. So it's like you're going down to your basement where you've got all the junk that you've forgotten or repressed, and then you dig a little further and you find more stuff. I think there's a better way of understanding this, which is that our unconscious or even our mind isn't wholly within our body. Like, that's a fallacy based on the egoic assumption of our own identity and that we are only our body. What if we turned it upside down and said we are in mind? Mind is a field. It's like an intelligent field that we are part of. You could almost say we're like a little carved up bit of it that thinks that we're terribly important, right? I think Alan Watts called it the skin encapsulated ego. So it's like, but maybe if we're in mind and mind is more of a field, then we can understand how mind has a collective insight. We can get information about other people and other times because we're accessing the field. And this is an idea that wouldn't have worked in Jung's time, but I think we have a lot more of an understanding that that's maybe what it is. We have a metaphor like the internet. We know there's a lot of information out there and we can kind of reach up and grab some of it when we need it, right? So maybe the mind is like this very intelligent field that has our history and our future and our potential and many, many futures in it and collected wisdom in it. And maybe it's just that what we call our mind is just I'm using my hands close to my head here, so listeners will have to just imagine that I'm talking about like the nearer part of that field is our own stuff. So your personal life, your stories, your beliefs, your history, the things that you've repressed are the nearer part of mind for you. So of course, when you start going into deeper mind, the first stuff, generally speaking, you're going to encounter is yours. But then the deeper you go, or the wider you go, the more intelligence you can access. And it doesn't even have to be in that order. You could get an intrusion of a collective idea. It happens to many people in a kind of spiritual emergency or grace, a moment of grace. They get some intelligence kind of cuts through it all and hits them directly. But generally speaking, people have to first expand a little bit to incorporate and get to know their own, you know, what coaches work on a lot, you know, limiting beliefs, shadow material, all of that. And then as they expand, and this is exactly what Jung observed in the shadow work, is that as you incorporate your shadow and then other parts of you, you get more and more access to collective intelligence. And what Jung says, we do have to go through our own stuff to get there. And almost ethically, we have to go through our own stuff to get there. So that's why I would rather say it's the not yet known rather than the unconscious. Because even Jung got into trouble around this, because at times he defined the shadow as kind of like what we've repressed and forgotten. And then in frustration at one point, he said, "It's the shadow's just everything you don't know about yourself yet," which is everything, almost everything. Like, it's very big. If everything we don't know about ourselves is our shadow, that's all of consciousness, pretty much. So I just like to turn the metaphor upside down and not use the word unconscious, because that just implies a basement. And then we get into trouble because we think it all has to be inside our body somehow, and it doesn't.
And maybe this is where synchronicity is. The wider one goes in that field, the more one opens up that possibility for synchronicity.
Yes, I think the wider one goes in that world, the more likely it is to have synchronistic experience, or to realize that there are synchronistic experiences. But if you want me to go tell you what I really believe, it's that synchronicity is the nature of the universe. Like, it's all connected. Everything is meaningfully connected. So what we call synchronicity is when little old me touches it for a moment. And we go, "Oh my God, you won't believe this coincidence." And we get this little glimpse that everything in ourselves and our lives and the world is connected. We go, "Oh my God, let me tell you what happened. It's so amazing," which is fantastic because it is an opening. But what we're opening to is the fact that this is reality. So even when I'm not having those little wonderful synchronicities, everything is synchronous.
Beautiful. So could you, I mean, in a way you're speaking about this, you took my next question, which was, but maybe you've got some more to say on this. I don't know. I was going to ask, in a sense, what is this territory that dream work and psychedelics are opening us into, this field? Maybe you've said this, you know, this field of consciousness, which is intimately connected. And let me just offer one reflection that comes up actually before you answer that, which is, you know, in a sense, your invitation feels like an inverse invitation. It's like, we're in mind. And that to me is resonant with what I'm seeing a lot, which is, you know, dispelling the myth of the hyper individualistic myth that we've inherited from modernity, where, you know, it's me, I'm an individual, it's all about me maximizing my experience, and I'm completely cut off from my experience. And it seems like we're moving into a time of fluid differences, where almost like the relationship between things becomes more primary than the things themselves. Or maybe you could say that the, you know, as individuals, we're arising out of this interconnected field. So what you're sharing feels really resonant with that as part of a worldview that's opening up. So I wonder if you could say a little bit more about, what it is that dreams and psychedelics open us up into.
If you don't mind, you said so much there that was so touching in a way. I think that I want to just be with that for another minute. I think we can look at that maybe two ways. One is that in certain cultures, we became excessively or unusually disconnected from the field. So we're healing as best we can. We're our part of our personal growth means healing that disconnection that we ourselves are experiencing. I think that would be one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is just that all journeys, all individuals, to the extent that we are individuals, are about understanding and connecting to the field more deeply. But we do seem to be suffering in the Western, modern Western world with extreme disconnection from the field, which could mean other people, but it could also mean trees, and it could mean, you know, divine intelligence or the unconscious or whatever. There's a lot of places we're disconnected. Ourselves.
Yeah.
So your question, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also a kind of materialist paradigm, you know, like feels part of that thread that, yeah, that we took this solid world to be all there is. And that seems to be changing quickly.
We squeezed the life out of it. We've squeezed the life out of that model. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if there is anything else to add about this field that, in a sense, maybe we get into the territory where it's actually about experiencing it. And that's really you can talk about it so much, but actually, you know, the real use is in using psychedelics and dreams to access this field and intelligence.
Yeah, I should say that just to set the frame a little bit better, if you had talked to me, you know, 30 plus years ago, I would never have spoken like this. I've only come to this awareness through I'm almost against my better judgment. You know, I resisted this interpretation. I wouldn't have understood it at all, but I kept, through my own experiences, I kept having it proven to me. So I'm not making this up as a nice theory, and I'm always a bit surprised when I hear myself saying it. But I have, you know, it's like my individual quest to feel better or know more, which I pursued ruthlessly, led me to this inevitable conclusion.
Yeah. Was there any significant moments on that journey that feel particularly important in terms of, you know, shifting your worldview? Or was it more a series of, you know, immersions into a particular experience that over time opened up this way?
There was definitely a series and levels and layers and, you know, falling back and deepenings and, you know, certainly, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, like, experience was important, but it didn't come out of nowhere, you know. Yeah, I would say that the most important, I can't give you a starting point. No, I can't give you a starting point. I can now look back at my whole life and say, oh, this had to happen for this to happen. This had to happen for this to happen. And it's quite a chain all the way back. So I don't want to evade your question, but there isn't a single moment.
I'd love to ask you about, you know, dreams now in particular, and how you work with leaders to, you know, to tap in or open to this not yet known. And, you know, just to say that I've seen in, you know, the traditional way of dreams when I was growing up was like people would have like a dream diary, you know, a journal, and they would, or a dictionary, you know, and they would kind of look up the different symbols. And I know you actually place presence or being with the symbols in the dream with importance. And I see a kind of coaching proliferating now, which is about being with experience rather than trying to change our experience and get to some, you know, some imagined future. It's actually more about being in presence with our experience, and then it unfolds and reveals itself. So I'm curious.
which can be a hard sell to a leader. I imagine you've experienced that as
Yeah,
well.
in the world which wants self-improvement and quick fixes and answers, but I think once people taste it, then the penny drops that this is the real, superpower is problematic as a phrase, but it's a capacity that's very potent. So I wonder, I just wanted to share that to kind of say for me what I've seen to be unfolding in the coaching field, and I think it's important. And so how do you invite leaders to work with dreams, and does it resonate with that,
Yeah, I love the way you made presence the key, because I think people, let me start where I think people get confused about dream work, or in my opinion, they're confused. First of all, people have a dream and they say, oh, it was about X. And they've immediately killed it in my mind, right? Because they've assumed they know what it's about. So how can you learn something if you assume it's about X? And they'll usually pick one motif from the dream and say it's about X. So that's the worst thing you can do, say it's about X. But instead say, I wonder what that was about. It would be a much better approach. So that has the inquiry quality of coaching. Another mistake people make, I think, is that they assume that symbols in a dream, and I would say everything in a dream is a symbol, has a one-to-one relationship with something else. X means Y. So then you say, I wonder what this means, the tree, and you look to get a dictionary and you say, well, tree is a symbol of X, so it must mean that. And that's also very reductive. And you'd be really, with those two things, you've really killed any possibility of getting any insight from your dream. And I think Jung was really helpful in changing the conversation and approach around this. But even he, because he knew so much about mythology and anthropology and comparative religion and literature, and like could have so much understanding of what things might mean that people got a little even further intimidated by his work. Where the essence of my understanding of his method was to be very present with the actual dream and help the client feel into it. And notice when they got very careful and slow speaking about what he called this bounded association. So it's like you talk about, you kind of talk around something in the dream, but he didn't have these words then, but in a very mindful way, a very somatically aware way. And as you talk about it, and you always, unlike Freud, Jung wanted to keep the people right near the actual dream image, because Jung took the dream as like, a printout from your doctor. It was like, you listen, if you start there, you stay there, right? So without getting too far away, you wander around that symbol a little bit. And essentially, again, he didn't use this language, you look for the aha. So as coaches, we know how to do this. This is what we do. We help somebody pay attention to what they're saying and bring their attention to the issue and notice the aha. And then we get even more curious about the aha. Well, that's the thing we want to do with the dream, not know what it's about and just explore it, paying attention for what starts to resonate to us. And then what happens if you can hold that space with somebody, then connections start being made, memories start appearing. Meaning becomes obvious, but it's always verified by two sources, the client and their dream. So it's like if you have to, you as the client will know that there's something in that, what you just said. I don't have to know that. I just have to help you know that, find that. But then we also have to check the dream that you haven't wandered too far away into something that you'd rather like it to mean. But it was actually a green dog in the dream, not a cat, like, and not a blue cat. It was a green dog. So stay with green, stay with dog, and like, we want to keep it close to the actual dream. And that's the biggest part of being present with dream work. And I think that if you can do that with a dream, and it's not always easy, but if you can do that with a dream, you've gotten so much value from it. And you, because then you're thinking about things differently and you're connecting things and you're, the whole focus of your day has changed because the dream has brought those things to light. And what you find as well, and probably talk about this more because you're interested in symbolism, is that what Jung said that I love is his dream is the best possible expression of a relatively unknown set of facts. So it's not a garbled communication. Just because we don't, it's like if somebody is speaking Chinese to you, they're not garbled. I'm assuming you don't know how to speak Chinese, but you wouldn't say they're garbled. You would just say, I don't understand Chinese. I need to learn Chinese. And then I'll know that what they're saying is coherent. The dream isn't garbled, nor is it hiding anything. It's the best way of expressing something. But we have to learn that, learn why that's true. And so when you deepen your understanding of the dream, then you start to realize, oh, like that, I'm just make something up here. That person was a cross between my aunt and my client. Like, how can that be? It doesn't make sense in the material world that they could be two people at once. But then you start to explore what's similar about your aunt and your client. And what was that character in the dream actually like? And you start to realize that there's some truth that's common to both of them and more. And the dream said it perfectly by putting them, this is a very simple example, putting them together in one being. Because if it had given you your aunt or given you your client, you wouldn't have realized that.
And I want to ask you in a moment, just if we can go in, zoom in on this process a bit more. But what you shared just was striking to me, because I was doing an exercise this last couple of days where I was going back in my life to memories that felt particularly vivid and pertinent. Yeah. And I was just going into the memory very viscerally, you know, and just writing what was happening, what was I feeling, what was striking. And I did it with like five or six different experiences. And I started to notice what you just described, actually. I was like, wow, there are actually patterns between these experiences that I have never noticed before. And it was like,
exactly.
It was like a, aha, wow, like a revelation. And even though, you know, in a way, I know those memories are probably, I'm not remembering them exactly how they were. There's a kind of dreamlike quality to them, which is fine, which is great. So that's one thing I just wanted to reflect. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think if you take a dream, and like I have dreams that I had 20 years ago, I'm still learning things from them. Oh, that's connected to that. Or, oh, that there was another level in there. So again, we're back to the synchronicity concept. Everything's connected and meaningful. So that memory is connected to a whole set of beliefs that you have since then. It has a meaning associated with it, or context from its context and how you've carried it. It's probably related to something in your body. It was probably set up by something in your story, even if you didn't cause that event to happen. On some level, psychologically, the pattern was there that manifested as that experience. So it's quite complex. And it's like everything is related. So what better language than poetry to communicate that? That's why the dream, it just can't give you a printout that says do X, or you should turn right here. Like, it can't be that literal, because everything, the nature of everything, isn't that literal. It's never just one thing. Nothing is just one thing from a perspective of mind or the unconscious.
It reminds me a little bit of reading Cynthia Bergeau's work on the imaginal. And I think she used this phrase, chaotic. It's like that there was a kind of patterning to experiences with, you know, kind of a center to that patterning, but, you know, with experiences and symbols circulating around that patterning, and that one could kind of begin to develop a kind of sensibility and intelligence to kind of feel into those patterns, and they would reveal their deeper intelligence and meaning, and in a sense, you know, plug one back in more deeply to the intelligence of that field that we're talking about.
Absolutely. I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking we could turn this all upside down and make it much more practical for coaches and leaders, because we're talking in this beautiful, you know, poetic, integrated way. But everybody is aware, they'll say to you, "As why do I keep doing this? Why do these things keep happening to me?" And that's a really important moment psychologically, because you're starting to say, these aren't random. There is some kind of repetitive pattern or connection here, and the connection is held in me, meaning I can maybe do something about changing the creation of this pattern. So even though we've been talking in this sort of very mystical way, people experience it in ordinary everyday life. Why does this keep happening to me? Why do I keep meeting the same people? Why do I keep showing up like this? And then with a coach, you might start looking at the ideas and beliefs or mindsets that you're bringing to situations. You might go a bit deeper and say, well, where do those come from? And then with our generally limited psychological understanding, we might look at, you know, our personal history, our childhood history, which is all really, really important, but it's not the only creation of the pattern. But I think everybody has the sense that the universe is more patterned, or our lives are more patterned than our understanding allows us to know. Do you know what I mean? It's like we don't have a model that says life is all pattern and we can change our relationship to the patterns, and yet we do experience it.
Let's kind of look at that process. So you started to explain, you know, how you support clients to be with dreams, that it's about being in relationship, in presence with these dreams and the symbols in dreams.
In a very focused way. Let's just be super clear about that.
Yeah, could you describe that?
Like,
do you have them imagine the dream, go back into the dream, or?
Well, the process that I bring people through, and again, I want to honor this, comes from Jung and was very beautifully simplified, I think, by a Jungian analyst named Robert Johnson in his book, Inner Work, which is a great manual. I would first hear the dream more than once. And I would ask the person telling me the dream to be super precise, as best they can remember, not make anything up, not assume anything, you know. If they're in one room, if they're in a skyscraper and then all of a sudden they're in the garden, don't assume they went downstairs. Dreams don't need to bring you down the stairs. Like, just no, don't make anything up. And I would hear it a few times to make sure I wasn't imagining things that weren't there, because it's their dream, not my dream. And it's amazing how many assumptions we would bring to someone else's dream and how much we would bring to our own dreams too. So let's get the actual dream on the table. And then we would just pick some elements of the dream, and to some extent my expertise might, if we have limited time, I'd love to do every single element of the dream, but if we had limited time, I might zone in on one or two, or ask them, what's the part that's most curious, you're most curious about, or has some energy for you? And then we would do this process, what we call bounded association, like explore this, tell me about it. Jung used the term to play with it a little bit. It's like turning it over and around in your mind. And, you know, there's lots, Jung essentially invented expressive arts therapies. So you could paint it, you could dance it, you could, you know, journal about it. Like, you just play with it, because the play opens up again that poetic consciousness. But it also means we can loosen our assumptions a little bit so that the memories and meaning can come connect to it. And then we're just holding space for that. And you can go this way, you can go this way, and go this way. And then, oh, there's a little aha. Let's pause and notice that. What's in that? What are you remembering? What are you becoming aware of now? Stop. That's the most important thing. So we kind of do that for one symbol, and then we might do it for another symbol. And again, it could take a really long time. There's a lot in one every dream. But we would do that, you know, as long as we could, time permitting. But by that point already, you can see there's been a major psychological shift in the person just because they're aware of those things. And you can go much further. You can start then sort of kind of weaving it all together and saying the dream is pointing you in this direction and this is connected to that and look how you're behaving. We can learn a lot of, we can get a lot of conclusions from the dream. But I really do believe the heart of it is just zeroing in on these ahas, finding these ahas. And the reason I said focused is because it is about picking a piece of the dream. And when I say a symbol, it could be a feeling in the dream as a symbol, or a sense could be a symbol, or a color. It's like anything in the dream we could call a symbol. And just being really present with that, not deviating, being really present with that. So it's focused and it's relaxed. It's just a curious way to be. You're not used to it. It can take a lot of energy at times, but it's because you are being focused and present, but also kind of letting your boundaries go a little bit. Does that make sense?
So presumably it does. Presumably the client is kind of getting quite a focused or maybe even altered state inside of this process, and it's visceral. It's not just a kind of rational process, but it's like a whole embodied experience. And one question I have is, do you, because I've noticed in dreams sometimes, like, this, it's very powerful to kind of go back into the dream several times, but the dream itself can unfold as I do that. So for example,
what do you mean by unfold?
So for example, a dream I had, and I won't share the whole dream. I won't share the dream, but a dream I had as a child, you said, oh, was stayed with me, and it's very vivid. And so the first telling of this dream was kind of like how I remembered it, but then going in again, it had much more definition to it. There were aspects of the dream that weren't there the first time, but it wasn't me. I wasn't trying to do that. You know, there wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna make this more interesting. I was just going back into the dream, but it felt very meaningful. It didn't feel like I was just making it up. It felt. In fact, this is what I said to the person afterwards. We worked with this dream for an hour and a half, but after I came out, I said that was a peak life experience for me. It was a transcendent, psychedelic experience, truly profound. And I could I could share more about the details of why, but I didn't. It had a life of its own, you know, and it was like I was tapping into the intelligence of the dream, and it wanted to reveal more to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So much in what you said. I'm so glad you shared that. Start with the biggest thing is, I think one of the reasons why it's so important to go into the dream work not knowing anything, or acting as if you don't know, and you're there to receive wisdom. And not constrain the options by saying that you know what it's about, or insisting that it be related to something that happened to you in the past, means that you're open to the transcendent essence of every dream, which most people aren't aware is there. And the dream may not flash it to you, but if you assume the dream is coming from what we could call source, then it's the path to source. So you'll find in a dream, if you're really honest and open and humble, lots of challenges to your reality as you have been carrying it, which is essentially an invitation to the transcendent. Yes. Absolutely. I think there's that potential in any dream we work with to lead us all the way, or point, you know, move us toward there. So that's for me, that was the most important thing that you said, the biggest thing you said.
And this is brings up a question about the not yet known. And, you know, teleology is a word I've seen you use. And like for me, that dream, I came away with a kind of alchemical imprint from the dream. And I sat with that for days and weeks afterwards, you know, as if it was actually a, almost as if the dream was still alive on top of my kind of physical reality. I mean, not all the time, you know, I was going about my day and it, but at moments when I paused, it would kind of come back to the foreground as, and
absolutely.
So, and I didn't really even need to make sense of it, you know. I just knew on a fundamental level that this was significant and incredibly fulfilling. Like I felt healing quality to it. Initiation is the word, actually. Wow. That would be the most accurate word to describe it. So what could you tell us more about the process you do with clients where, you know, that you've got them in the dream, they're going to these moments that feel pertinent, or these symbols, and then you're moving in different directions. Maybe you could say something about that. How do you know where to go? And then what happens? What's the value that comes from it? I know you've been speaking into that, but could you say more about that? Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, Joel. You say so much. There's so much in what you said that I feel that I'm tracking some things I want to come back to before we get to your question. So I'll leave it to you to remind me of your question. But I think, first of all, not every dream, there are some dreams that feel overwhelmingly spiritual, you know, magnificent, life-changing. I don't want people to get disappointed if they're not experiencing that immediately in their dreams. I would say that most dreams are like giving you the next step. They're pointing you in the next direction, the next step toward that. And I would say that many dreams, if you go deeply, deeply, deeply into just the one dream, it can take you all the way, but it may not be obvious from the dream, but it's still valuable, even if it just gives you a really good nudge in the right direction. Okay. The second thing you said that I really wanted to come back to is you used a big word, teleology, and I'm wondering if we could unpack that a little bit.
I think that connects to my question as well. So yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm.
So could you give me your working definition of teleology? Because I don't know, think it's a common, a commonly understood.
You know, it's a new word to me. So mm-hmm. I, through reading your posts, and I mean, my understanding is it's a kind of future beckoning,
beautiful,
a beckoning future, or the imprint of the future as it comes to us in this moment.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know that much about the kind of philosophical concept of teleology, but my understanding is that it's like this is leading us somewhere. There's a goal implicit in this. So yes, I like the way you described it. And this kind of gets back to some of the things we said earlier. But Jung believed that the dream or the unconscious is, he called it purposive, meaning it's leading us towards something. Now, you can believe that or not. He was contrasting that with Freudian view, and his understanding was that the dream was reductive. It was bringing you down and reducing and back. And Jung saw the dream as like an acorn. It could unfold where the oak tree is implicit in the acorn. So in the symbol in the dream and in the whole construction of your dream world is the idea that there's something that is implied that could be unfolded through engagement with it. So what does that mean for us? It gets back to this point of like there's the not yet known that has wisdom and insight. So there's something out there that we're moving toward or could move toward. I would actually say there's multiple versions of it. In each choice we make sort of alters that a little bit. But there's definitely a sense that it's not that it knows the future in a psychic way, but it's more like the acorn and the oak. It has something implied that we could become. And that the dream is always giving us, it's like, what's the difference of approaching something, the dream, and saying, oh, this is just about something that I know, versus every dream is telling me something that I don't yet know, that it knows that I don't know. Like, if you want to get insight, that's a better attitude. At least to have the open mind enough to say, maybe it knows something that I don't know. Maybe I don't know everything, even about me. Like, that's a really good starting point. And then see if it does give you something that feels meaningful and helpful. And then you go, wow, it gave me something meaningful and helpful about me. So there's something in me or around me that knows more about me than I do, and it seems to know a good way for me to get there. And it seems to have the feeling that there seems to be a feeling that it'll be better when I get there. And it's a whole different relationship to the not yet known, is that it's leading us somewhere individually and collectively with some room for maneuver.
I get a sense of benevolence of the not yet known in that sense. Do you have an example of, working with a dream, and receiving guidance or, accessing this intelligence of the not yet known in a way that, I don't know, it led you or a client to, I don't know, make a decision or create something, or maybe it shifted some of the, the patterning we discussed earlier, like these repeating patterns.
So there's a lot of questions in there, but there's so many examples. You could get a dream that actually does solve a problem for you and gives you an answer to a problem that you're working on. And again, it might be in a metaphorical form, but it leads you to look to invent something or try a different combination of things than you're working on. Because in your when you're sleeping, your brain can process things for sure differently. But most of the time, the insight from dreams are, I consider them to be nudges, psychological nudges. It's like, look this way, don't look that way. You're not track this level of the situation. You're missing this piece. This is the dimension where there's really great growth. This is how you're behaving that isn't helpful. Can give you a very startling picture of yourself. Like if you had your desk up against a wall, and in the dream you're working in a really stressed out way, and maybe your current problem is stress and a lot of work-life balance issues. But on the other side of your desk is this doorway that's scary. And your desk is kind of blocking your access to this doorway that's scary. This is a really simplistic example, just for the sake of answering your question. But you could interpret from that dream or understand from that dream that your pattern of overwork, which is implicit, is indicated in the dream by the way you're working, is stopping you or is in the way of you opening the door that's scaring you. So then you get some very interesting information that maybe the door that's scaring you, the unknown within you, the fears that you have, maybe it's the trauma that you haven't dealt with, is actually keeping you in the pattern of overwork at your desk, blocking the door. So you start to see that maybe the reason, I mean, you could, if somebody comes to you with a stress problem, you could do lots of stress management tools and time management tools and all of the teach them mindful breathing and get them to the gym. You could do all these things. But the dream would show them that the reason they're perpetuating this dynamic is because they're afraid of something within themselves. Very common pattern, which is why I've given you this example. In ourselves that we don't know, or that's kind of pushing at us, is we throw ourselves into work. And we can't stop working because if we stop working, we'd have to open the door. So if you really want to unlock the pattern, you need to have some understanding of where it's coming from. Or you might, it helps to have some understanding of where it's coming from. And that dream in just that one tiny little vignette is showing you how you're behaving, conscious and unconscious. So then that you take from that dream, oh, you'd be starting a conversation. If you had that dream, the client who may not have been interested in, not even known that they were hiding, they were afraid of certain things in themselves. Once you start talking about the dream, well, you'd say, okay, let's talk about the door. And they say, oh, well, there's this funny door. It was like really scary. How could a door be scary? So, well, tell me about your fear. What was the feeling of fear? And then you start to be, you're talking, so suddenly you're talking about fears. Because you weren't talking about fears before the dream. And then you might say, well, tell me about the door. It's like, oh, again, I'm really simplifying here. The door, it wasn't like a door in my office. There's no door in front of my desk. It's like a door, I think now, it was like a door in this house we had for when I was age 4. We lived in this really unusual house. It was like that door. You say, well, tell me about that time in your life. Oh, it was when I was really happy. You know, like, and then so the memories of that door. And then, well, what happened? And you start to explore that. So suddenly they're talking about their childhood. And you see, so just by having had the dream and talking about it, they've started to explore what they've been afraid of exploring. But then if you go further and you actually have done that work and they feel connected to the meaning of the dream, because you would never impose meaning on the dream, then you can say, oh, let's look at how the dream is saying you're behaving relative to that. Oh my gosh, I'm working so, you know, then they would get it. The pattern would become clear. And then they would understand, maybe if I spent more time opening the door, I wouldn't be compulsively working. Ah, yeah, exactly. But the great thing about it is that A, no therapist needed to tell them that. They figured it out themselves. Because they wouldn't have believed it if a therapist told them that. And the therapist might be wrong, but the dream isn't wrong. The therapist might be making it up from what they learned in therapy school, you know, like this causes that, but they may be right, they may be wrong, but the dream isn't wrong. The dream is giving that person a picture of how they're behaving and an indication of where to go to shift it.
Yeah, what? That's beautiful because it does feel very different than if you were imposing a kind of therapeutic or, you know, pathological, whatever notion of what was happening onto the client, and therefore this needs to happen. It feels very different. And I wonder what's powerful about the working with the dream in this way, opposed to something like internal family systems, which, you know, the coach may say, hey, maybe there's some parts here that are keeping you from, you know, that are keeping you stuck at the desk. And, you know, internal family systems, by the way, also just as a note, is also very imaginal in its, you know, that can also get quite, once you let the guardrails off of, you know, having predefined types of parts, it can get very archetypal and imaginal. But I wonder, what do you feel is the value of bringing with the dream, you know, as opposed to something like IFS?
I don't know enough about IFS to say what the benefits or, you know, what would be superior or inferior. It's probably just another way of accessing the unconscious or the not yet conscious. And I think there are many ways to access the not yet conscious. We chose to talk about the two I'm most familiar with, which is dreams and psychedelics, but there are many other ways. And I respect them. The only thing, so we could say what's different about dreams and psychedelics too. They are different. Yeah. Every technique, every road, I believe is accessing the same broad bank, the same mind, but through slightly different means and maybe flavors. But the thing I'll say about dreams that I think is quite remarkable is that they're just given to us. We don't have to go do a technique or take a drug. It's just given to us. Like, we go to sleep, we have a dream. So there's a beauty for me in that. Oh, I've got more information. Thank you. got more information. Thank you.
And
So that's sort of the special thing I think about dreams, or one of the special things.
yeah. Do you find there are similarities and differences between dream work and psychedelic work? And in particular, you know, the integration of psychedelic experiences, which, you know, I think is maybe a, an area of psychedelic work which seems a bit more, less well developed, you know.
Gosh, that's a very big question. And also, let's be super clear, there's many, many different ways of working with psychedelics, even more variation in that than with dreams. And I don't think they're all equal at all. I'd be very strong on that. The context and the way in which you're working with a psychedelic has a huge impact on the healthiness and value of the experience. So it's not all created equal when I'm speaking about that. But I would say, generally speaking, my understanding, my experience is that we're accessing the same mind through different doorways. But and generally speaking, the psychedelic doorway is just a million times more powerful and deeper and faster, potentially too much sometimes, but it's the same material. And if you work with your own symbolic language over time, you can feel the connections. It would be almost like the story that you told about the work that you did with the dream, which was seems like a very potent dream, and you're very blessed to have that consciousness and support to go into it more deeply. But it was almost as if the dream, which was at this level, I'm just indicating a shallow level here, because of the attention and ability and whatever grace that you used to access the dream, you nearly moved it into a psychedelic experience. It was like at that, you deepened the level of it. So I don't think they're really accessing different places, just in different ways at different speeds and different depth.
It did feel psychedelic, you know, that it's really astute comment. And what I appreciated about it is it feels like, you know, it's another way into this field we're talking about. And psychedelics are great, but they also have a potential to, you know, to, I mean, like you said, they're incredibly potent. So they're not for everyone, and therefore it's great dreams are there. And I'm not kind of saying, oh, you know, dreams are like the things that people who can't handle psychedelics should do. I feel like imagine all, you know, and I know you use this phrase, the poetic imagination. Like my sense is imagine all practice, like not even dreams, but you know, moving into an imaginal experience that is not just daydreaming, but is intentional. I've also had incredibly powerful revelations, and not only that, but I every time I did it, I was struck by how good I felt afterwards. I was like, I just feel fantastic right now. It's like my well-being would just be off the chart. So I think it's a vastly undertapped capacity.
Yeah, and Jung called that active imagination, where you consciously engage your unconscious, basically, in any number of ways. Journaling, voice dialogue, any number of techniques. So absolutely, I think that's completely valid. The thing about dreams that I really like, even better than that, is that it really, my experience of dream is saying, look at this. Look at this. Whereas these other techniques that you're talking about, including things like shamanic journeying, you might have a question that you're going to explore. You know, you might have a particular framework you're going into. It's great that you're consciously engaging with it, and I use those techniques. But the dream is saying, like, whatever your ego is thinking about now, like, look at this.
Exactly.
Look at this now. This is the next step. So I like the kind of objectivity of that. And that I'm like, I feel like, okay, I didn't constrain this. I didn't manipulate it. I didn't influence it. It's just like, if the dream says it, I better listen. So that's what I like. I want to go back to what something you said about psychedelics, because I think it's like so important these days to be clear about this. I would never say that not everybody can handle psychedelics. I don't, that's not my experience. I've seen psychedelics used well for people who were in extreme distress or unstable. The issue is much more about the way we're using them. Like set and setting, safety, intention, the right kind of facilitation. So I'm actually more concerned about the people who are using psychedelics casually and don't think they had a problem. Because I think they may have more of, may have had more of, they have may have had more of a problem than they realize. So yeah, I think it's a big subject, but it's more about the way they're used than who's using them for me.
And they're certainly, they're here right now. I mean, these psychedelic conferences in the US have thousands of people at them, and I mean, we could have it spend a whole podcast on that, the kind of big pharma coming in trying to capitalize on that move and the health of it. I feel drawn to ask you about two things as we move into the last period of our conversation. So let's see which one you feel called to pick up first. One is how this work with dreams and psychedelics can connect to the hero's journey. And the other topic is, particularly, I know you work with corporate clients, people in leadership roles, teams. If you could say more about how people receive that work and the benefit it has there, and maybe those two topics weave together, but which, we could pick up one first and then.
Let me start say something briefly about the first one, and then we'll talk about the second one about leadership, because I think that's maybe the part we haven't touched on as much in this conversation of the three words in the title. The hero's journey is simply, as I understand it, largely comes from Joseph Campbell's wonderful work, which was very influenced by Jung. And he basically looked at world mythology and came up with common themes that describe the journey of an individual to enlightenment and the process of bringing that awareness back into the world. So he both gave us a really wonderful structure for understanding imagery in the not yet conscious. So we could do lots of, we could look at how the hero's journey manifests in each dream. A certain stage of the journey is appearing in this dream. I sometimes say there's dreams that are initiatory, meaning they set out the challenge. And then there's dreams that give the answer, they're the conclusion. And then most of the dreams are sort of in the middle as you're working it out. So that's like an arc of a journey, right? Of course, they don't come in linear order. But so Campbell's work is super important to help us understand the dreams, and but it's not different than that. And we could define the one of the definitions I like, again, it's all a metaphor of a dream, is that the dream is like a film written, directed and produced by the self, by which I mean your deeper self or the your truth or the source or God, whatever you want to call that omega point. So the dream is written, directed, produced by the self. It stars the ego. And the point of the dream is to show the ego how it's doing on its journey. What's the journey? To find the self. So as it puts, so to make it very simple, it's like God saying, I'm over here, this way, this way, this way. No, don't go that way, go this way. Okay, if you're going that way, then we're gonna have to do this piece. Come over here, over here, over here. So it's like a hide and seek. And the dream is just giving you the next stage of your journey. And whether you know you're on that journey or not, I believe that journey is implicit in our being. Again, it's my belief, but this is how I approach a dream and seems to help people get meaning from it. So we're all on a hero's journey, and the dream is just giving us the next installment. Or it's like the next set of clues on a treasure hunt. Like, here's a clue. You think it's over there, but it's actually over here.
So therefore,
It's very
even
efficient, Joel. It's like really, I didn't say this. Maybe this is the title, leadership. It's really efficient. I said it was objective, but it's like we can go off and do all of these things that are fun and exciting and try this workshop and that workshop. But I believe the dream is telling you, no, do this next. And as coaches, where we, what I hope make it paramount to honor what that individual needs next, not what we think they need next or what some people might need next, but where they're at. The dream is right in line with that by giving us a bit more information about the next step for them that they will understand and get. So it's super efficient.
I love that. Yeah, that's so, I'm so glad you highlighted that again, because it's, the difference between, oh, this is what I think I need. And not to say we should just wipe that out, but, so often, well, where's that really coming from?
Well,
And it's,
maybe we should wipe it out.
maybe,
It's a good introduction. This is what I think I need. But then the dream says, "Well, what's this? You're talking all about your mother, but it's actually about your father. Like, talk about your father." Oh, never thought of that. That wasn't in my model. The dream is correcting my perception. You think you want to be more authoritative as a leader, so you work up with a coach on developing your strength and your command and your presence. And the dream is saying, well, wait a second, why your dream gives you this image of this frail little mouse. And you go, oh, maybe. And that the dream, by exploring that, you go, oh, there's this all this tenderness or fragility in me. And let's explore that a little bit more. And then through exploring the tenderness and fragility, you find your authority from a very different place. But the coach and the client could easily kind of co-conspire to reinforce the client's ego. And again, you have to have a contract. It has to be overt. But if the client's ego is saying, I need to be more authoritative, and this is what I want to do, and I want to learn how to give presentations and be command a room, and it's great. But maybe there's a different way, at least, to that, or maybe the next step for them is somewhere else. So let's balance that egoic need with what the not yet conscious is saying the need is. So.
You teed up leadership there. What's the most important way in to this topic of leadership in the context of this conversation?
Let's start with efficiency. A leader comes to a coach wanting to change in some way or learn something or develop in some way. So I think the dream is a really useful ally because it shows what's efficient, and it helps both the coach and the client get out of their mind traps or their egoic biases. So it's just simply efficient. I also think the dreams can help a leader access dimensions of self that they have trouble accessing. It might be particularly about the imaginal. So a lot of leaders aren't proficient in what we might call the imagination, and yet they kind of know they need it to get new ideas, but they haven't grown up. You don't learn, writing poetry in business school. So it gives them immediate access to the imaginal, and it also seems to give us very direct access to feelings, emotions, and the body, which is also a problem, a challenge for many leaders. Often the emotion or the access to the emotion is right there in the dream. So it makes it very easy to open those other dimensions that is probably critical for the leader's development. So it's efficient, it's inter and it's objective, and it's easy access to these other realms. But I think at the deeper level, and what excites me about this work now, when I launched this dream training for coaches, I wasn't prepared for the response that it got. I thought, I'm bringing this skill to coaches and it's really useful for leaders. But a lot of people said, we need this now. We need this now. And I've been doing this for years. I think, why are people saying we need this now? And I think we need this now. Or what I'm hearing is that people feel we need this now because we need a new vision. Like we better access our mind or wisdom. Like we're we're kind of depleted in our solutions. And if we have leaders or people in leadership or powerful roles, we hope that they will be leading in the accessing of wisdom. So anything we can do to help leaders access their wisdom will help all of us. And many leaders that you and I work with are, you know, they're suffering, they're struggling, they're anxious, they're lost, they're overwhelmed, they're it's like, you know, Jung believed a crisis gives birth to a new symbol. It gives birth to a transcendent awareness, right? It's something you've experienced. But if you don't know that, all you can do, you look for the novelty in it. You just get caught in the conflict, which is okay. Maybe the conflict needs to happen in the crisis, or the chaos has to happen. But someone who has a kind of leadership mindset to wisdom, if that makes sense, is always really being open for the new birth or the new paradigm or the radically new idea that might come from this. And that's something we have to, I think it helps to learn how to do. You know, it helps to have access to where the wisdom will come from, and it helps to be curious, and it helps to have some skills at harvesting or, you know, speaking that language. But I think we, at the moment, we really need to be very alert for new shoots of life that we haven't, and new paradigms, new models, because things are moving fast and people are very scared.
Yeah, I get the sense of leaders who are kind of imbued with an imaginal poetic sensibility, so that they can hold space for this, you know, not yet known to emerge more fully, because they're not kind of contracted or co-opted by a kind of you know, problem solving kind of attitude, which feels like the mostly that's what's the abundant in leadership, you know, and that that this imaginal sensibility, this intelligence and wisdom can be shared as well, that it's not just coming through a leader's ego and it's like competitive, you know, it's about winning the game, but it's actually coming through this kind of collective evolutionary intelligence of what does life want to manifest in our times in response to the challenges we face. And that feels potent too, or pertinent.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. There are coaches and consultants who help teams and systems access that collective intelligence. Because again, there are ways to be more attuned to that. There are ways to facilitate that. But there aren't that many leaders who are willing to let that happen, because they're holding on to I have to know best, I have to be right, I have to find the solution. And then they'll go into spaces, even when we set them up to maximize collective intelligence. I see this over and over and over again. The leader will go into that space so anxious and so needing to take charge, because they're anxious or people expect them to take charge, that they will kill the possibility of emergence. So that same attitude we spoke about to the dream of curiosity and openness and humility, I could learn here. This is the thing that I would have to first coach a leader before we created a space like that, is that you have to come in here as the most curious person and the biggest, the best listener. And that's how you lead in this space. Looking, you have to be the one really listening and looking for this. I'll help you, but you have to be looking for the something that's new and the something that's challenging and the something that's disruptive and the something that's a bit weird and not conforming to expectations, and that it could come from anywhere. It could come from anywhere in the system, not just your ex-co. But it's not many leaders who have achieved that amount of humility. And there's still value, still role for leader. The leader has plenty of things to do still. But I do think the solution needs to be listened for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to get back to what you're saying about teleology, it's like a healthy future is whispering to us, but we need to hear it.
I just want to share something that strikes me, which is, I'm thinking of Martin Luther King, you know, in his famous speech where he keeps repeating, "I have a dream."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously that speech is incredibly famous, and it touches me so deeply when I listen to him speak. And I wonder if that's what's coming through him in that moment. I mean, he's using those words literally, "I have a dream," but it's like, it feels like he's tapping into a kind of collective wisdom. And I don't know if this is true, but I seem to remember hearing that he had a whole speech prepared, but he kind of at the last minute decided to change some of it. And well, where did that come from? I don't know. But at the least, I'm struck by him saying those words and how impactful they were.
So two things I want to comment on. One is, I have heard that story about that speech, by the way, but what it reminds me of is that when people get more comfortable and trusting of the not yet conscious and their access to it, they become more comfortable at just opening their mouths and not knowing what's going to come out. Which is an interesting, I mean, I think one of the most inspiring people are the people who do that. And what comes out is better than what their ego could have figured out. So I have heard that story, and I think there's something in that about our familiarity and our trust in our access to the not yet conscious, and that there's inspiration there. So many leaders I work with, they want to be more inspiring, but they're not accessing their own source of inspiration. And then the other thing I wanted to say is, isn't it interesting that we use the same word in English for the nighttime dream, and dream in the sense of vision or purpose? Yeah, I think I'm curious about how they relate.
That's what I mean. It's like I'm struck by that. That of course he meant a vision, but everything you share about the level of inspiration and spontaneity, I don't know what the, you know, mm-hmm. that he was speaking with there, the truth and freshness resonates so much. And Martin, this has been a really wonderful conversation, and I feel it's been imbued for me with a kind of imaginal inspiration. Actually, there's been this kind of perfume of that. And is there anything you'd like to share? I mean, you've shared so much, so maybe there is nothing, but in closing, if any, and I'm going to ask you in a moment where we can find out more about your work, but
I think we said so many things that are like doors we could open further, but I feel complete in the overview. Yeah, thank you, Joel.
Yeah. Where can we find out? I know you're putting on trainings for coaches, as you mentioned, so.
Yeah, I think we'll put something in the comments to your podcast about where, I haven't announced the dates yet for 2026, but we'll put them there. But the core idea is that I've realized that coaches can actually not be so afraid of this territory. And assuming they have a certain level of self-awareness and depth, and they're committed to being humble and mindful and respectful, we can help our clients find meaning from their dreams safely and ethically, and get huge amounts of information from that. A lot of coaches I've met are kind of afraid to go there. But I think there are ways we can go there that will be hugely helpful. So the course is about getting coaches started doing that with dreams.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I hope people listening to this feel inspired and come your way. And
thank you.
Martin, I know people can find you on LinkedIn as well. Thanks so much for joining us. Yeah. And maybe this is, you just teed up a part two at some point.
Love to. I just want to thank you, Joel, as well, because you've brought such a quality of warmth and like a tender, moist wisdom to the conversation that just makes me feel more at ease. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.